We return to Leviticus, the rule book for Levites, chapter number 21, and we're going to pick it up in verse 16. We're talking about things that are specific to priests, the descendants of Aaron. They have particular rules that apply to them. And so we just read about how they're not allowed to marry outside of the Levitical group. Actually, it seems like they're supposed to marry within the priesthood families. But also, their wife has to be a virgin when they're married. That's just the way it works. They can't marry divorcees. They can't marry widows. This is connected to them needing to be the highest peak of holiness, devotion to God, since they are the intermediaries. They are representing God to the people and people to God. And along those same lines, they have to be, as best as we can describe it, perfect physical specimens. Here's what it says, verse 16. He who is spoke to Moses, saying, speak to Aaron, saying, none of your offspring throughout their generations who has a blemish. Now, I have to comment on the word blemish here. It's our English Standard Version's representation. When I hear the word blemish, maybe this is the way you hear it too, I think acne, some sort of skin imperfection. That's not what this word is representing. It's representing a flaw of some sort anywhere on the body, something that is not according to the original design of God for that body. So it's not just skin stuff. Anyone who has, I think one of the other versions says defect, departure from the norm. So none of your offspring throughout their generations who has this may approach to offer the bread of his God. So they are not allowed to participate in priestly services. Verse 18, here's some specifics. For no one who has a blemish shall draw near, a man blind or lame. So if he can't see, he can't serve. Even a person with cataracts, even a cataract in one eye, that would be enough for him to be retired from the priesthood. Lame, meaning something's wrong with his hips, and so he's got a limp or anything like that, or he maybe is paralyzed. He can't serve. Now, some of that would be pragmatic, but again, a lot of it is symbolic. Priests are supposed to be the perfect specimen of the human body. And that doesn't mean that they have to be fit and trim and all of that. Just they're supposed to be complete, whole. One who has a mutilated face, so scarring perhaps of some sort, or maybe some sort of defect to the nose, like maybe they had a broken nose and it's deviated to one side. Maybe they got hurt on their ear, and so maybe they got cauliflower ear like a boxer might have. That's enough. They can't do it. In fact, thinking about ears here, I'll tell you a quick kind of silly story as to how this works. There was, in the period between the Old and New Testaments, a fight over different families that wanted to be in control of the priesthood, the high priesthood in particular. And a relative of the current high priest came up to him and did the normal greeting, you know, that whole kissing on both cheeks, the grabbing of the shoulders and the kissing on both cheeks. And when this younger relative did that with his older high priest relative, he bit his earlobe off. And that was all it took for that high priest to become a former high priest. And the new guy could kind of take over. So that's how how this idea is carried out by someone that wanted to seize the power of the priesthood. All right, so on to this. One who has a limb that's too long. So we've got examples in history of some people that have out of proportion limbs. And so that would not be acceptable. Or a man who has an injured foot or an injured hand. We're not talking about a temporary injury, although they wouldn't be able to serve while the injury was in place. We're talking about more permanent, like they lost a finger or a part of a finger, or they lost a toe or part of a toe. Or a hunchback. So in this case, either a genetic deformity or possibly osteoporosis later in life makes them kind of hunch over. Or a dwarf. So someone that has a disproportionate body and they're shorter than norm. So it's a physical issue. Or a man with a defect in his sight. We kind of already talked about that. Or an itching disease, or scabs, or crushed testicles. So perhaps something has happened to his skin that is problematic, or perhaps something that's happened to his private parts. That's enough to have that person retired from active service as a priest. Verse 21, no man of the offspring of Aaron the priest, who has a blemish or a defect, shall come near to offer he who is his food offerings, since he has this blemish, this defect. He shall not come near to offer the bread of his God. Now verse 22 says, he may eat the bread of his God, both of the most holy and of the holy things, but he shall not go through the veil. Now, the veil that's being referenced there is the veil of the temple building or the tabernacle building, the shrine building itself, because priests served in the holy place every single day. So they were expected when they were on duty to go through that first veil into the three-sided sanctuary structure. But these guys would not be allowed to do so. But he can eat the food that is due the priesthood, because after all, that's how he gets paid. So the idea is that, yeah, he can't serve actively in the hands-on stuff, but yes, he still can eat the holy food that has been brought in by the worshipers. So he shall not go through the veil or approach the altar, so no offering of sacrifices, because he has a blemish, a defect, that he may not profane my sanctuaries, for I am he who sanctifies them. And so this is the reason I started with the idea that it's not a pragmatic thing or not a logistical issue about a handicap or a situation where they're not physically capable of doing some of the activities. It is that they are supposed to represent God to the people and the people to God, and therefore each priest must be at the peak of the design of the human body. Verse number 24 finishes, so Moses spoke to Aaron and to his sons and to all the people of Israel. Chapter 22. He who is spoke to Moses, saying, speak to Aaron and his sons, so that they abstain from the holy things of the people of Israel, which they dedicate to me, so that they do not profane my holy name. I am he who is. So we're about to get into this idea that they are going to stay away from the off-limits things unless they have specifically got business being involved with it. Say to them, if any one of your offspring throughout your generations approaches the holy things that the people of Israel dedicate to he who is, while he has an uncleanness, that person shall be cut off from my presence. I am he who is. And now we're kind of back to the whole idea that unless they are authorized to be interacting with the holy things, they shouldn't be interacting with the holy things. And that includes even temporary disability, such as, verse 4, none of the offspring of Aaron who has a leprous mark. Remember, I don't like the word disease here, because leprosy in the Bible is not a disease. It is a mark placed by God on a person, place, or thing that needs to be evaluated before it can be allowed to continue, if the mark has been removed, they have to go through a cleansing ceremony before they can resume normal interactions. So it has got something to do with God's activity. So if a priest gets marked by God with leprosy, then they are not allowed to engage in the priestly activities. But the reality is, as you may remember when we were back in the leprosy passages, is that they would have to move outside the encampment and be on their own, or more likely, be with only other people marked with the mark of leprosy. But that's not the only thing. Or a discharge, meaning when we think back earlier in the book of Leviticus, maybe they are sick and they're vomiting. Maybe they're sick and they have diarrhea. Maybe they are sick and they're coughing and sneezing and producing all this nasty discharge. That also required people to move outside the boundaries of the encampment to go to what we would probably refer to today as a hospital encampment or a hospital tent. So same thing applies to the priests. So none of those who have a discharge may eat of the holy things until he is clean. So he has to go through the same procedure everybody else does. Once he has been cleansed of these issues of either the leprosy mark or having his sickness, his discharge, then he's allowed to go through the cleansing procedure and come back on duty. We're still in 4. Sorry, it was a long verse. Whoever touches anything that is unclean through contact with the dead, or a man who has had emission of semen. So these are things that happen in life. I mean, you have somebody close to you die, and so you want to be involved in the funeral service. Then that is going to make you unclean for a period of time. If you're married and you have sexual relations with your wife, that's going to make you unclean for a very limited period of time, till the following sunset. Or even if you're not married, or you are married but you're not having sexual activity with your wife, but it just has a nocturnal emission, that's enough. Whoever touches a swarming thing by which he is made unclean, like some sort of critter, like a mouse, or a rat, or a cockroach, something like that, whether it's alive or dead, then they are also unclean for a brief period of time till the next sunset. And so the priests are not supposed to be touching anything clean when they're unclean. He may be made unclean, or a person from whom he may take uncleanness, whatever his uncleanness may be. So it's transferable. I mean, if a priest has family members that are sick or have come into contact with something unclean, that can also touch them. And so they have to go through proper procedure. Verse 6, the person who touches such a thing shall be unclean until the evening, and shall not eat of the holy things unless he has bathed his body in water. So now we're back to the food that is rightfully that of the priests, because they work for God, and therefore they're supposed to be eating of the things brought in sacrifice to God. As long as they are counted as unclean, they can't eat that holy food. It's not allowed. Verse number 7 says, when the sun goes down, he shall be clean. Afterward, he may eat of the holy things because they are his food. He shall not eat what dies of itself or is torn by beasts, and so make himself unclean by it. I am he who is. Now, that's interesting to me. The other Jewish people, the non-priests, they were allowed to cut the throat of a recently deceased animal, like an animal that just keels over, or an animal that gets attacked and killed by a beast. They were allowed to cut the throat of that animal, bleed it out properly, and then they could eat that meat, but they had to go through one-day ceremony of recovering cleanness because the meat had not been kosher killed. The priests are not allowed even to do that. Every bit of meat they eat has to be kosher killed. Verse number 9. And if you're wondering about kosher killed, it means that they have to have their throat cut while they are conscious and alive. Verse number 9. They shall therefore keep my charge, lest they bear sin for it and die thereby when they profane it. I am he who is, who sanctifies them. A little bit of a warning there of what's already happened. Remember that Aaron's two oldest sons had died because they didn't follow proper procedure in the tabernacle services. And so here's a little reminder from God. Follow the proper procedures, or you risk being executed on the spot for showing such disregard for the holy sanctuary and the holy services. Verse number 10, a lay person, meaning a non-priest, shall not eat of a holy thing. So now we're back to the meals, the food that belongs to the priests and their family members, by the way, because that's their job. That's their pay. And so here's a reminder that the priests can't feed that holy food to non-priests. Even if they're a guest in their house, they can't feed the holy food to those guests. No foreign guest of the priest or a hired worker shall eat of the holy thing. So you've got a non-Israeli coming to visit. They cannot eat the food that the priests have by right. If they've hired somebody to come and work for them for a bit, they can't feed the holy food to them either. However, verse 11 says, if a priest buys a slave, and the concept here is he picks up the indebtedness contract of someone. Remember that slavery that we talk about in this context tended to be people who got themselves in over their head financially, or sometimes they ended up getting captured as a prisoner of war because of war actions. And after a war, usually the winner made up for some of the money that they put out in the war itself by taking slaves from the losing side. It was reparations, if you will, in personnel. And so here it says, if a priest picks up that sort of slave as his property for money, that slave may eat of the holy items, and anyone born in his house may eat of his food. So the idea is anyone who is a permanent member of his household, not hired, but somebody that's considered a member of his household, yes, they may eat the food. Verse 12, a little bit more detail. If a priest's daughter marries a layman, meaning someone who's not of the priesthood, she shall not eat of the contribution of the holy things. So once she marries outside the priesthood, she now has no right to eat of the priesthood food, even if she's home visiting mom and dad. Doesn't matter. However, if a priest's daughter is widowed or divorced, has no child, and returns to her father's house, the reason the child is mentioned in here is it's assumed that if she was widowed and she had children, that her husband's family would be looking after her. If she's divorced she has a child, then again, the family of the husband has some responsibility for her and the child. So if she's widowed, divorced, has no kids, and she returns to her father's house, as in her youth, she may eat of her father's food, yet no layperson shall eat of it. So her status returns to being the single daughter of a priest, and so she has a right to eat of the food. I know a lot of this stuff is really nitpicky, but remember, this is the rule book for the Levites. Verse 14. If anyone eats of a holy thing unintentionally, so somehow, I can't think of something off the top of my head, somehow they get a hold of the holy food and they eat it and then goes, hey, that was holy food that you just ate. Then this is the procedure to make up for that. He shall add the fifth of its value to it. For our purposes, it's a lot easier, I think, to say he has to pay back 120% of the value of the item he just ate. And he gives the holy thing to the priest. So if he gets interrupted in the eating of it, he has to give what remains back. And then he has to give 120% of the value of the thing that he was munching on to the priest, to the priesthood. This is his way of saying, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have been doing that. There's a little bit of a connection at this point to the guilt offering sacrifice, which mentions the idea of paying back 120% of value. Verse 15, they shall not profane the holy things of the people of Israel, which they contribute to he who is, and so cause them to bear iniquity and guilt by eating their holy things, for I am he who is, who sanctifies them. So we come back again to the reminder, priests represent God to the people and the people to God, and therefore they have to be at the highest standard of the community. Verse 17, he who is spoke to Moses, saying, speak to Aaron and his sons and all the people of Israel and say to them, when any one of the house of Israel or of the sojourners in Israel, so people who are not Israelis, but they're living in the land of Israel, if they present a burnt offering as his offering for any of their vows or freewill offerings that they offer to he who is, so these are things that are given out of personal choice. If it is accepted for you, it shall be a male without blemish of the bulls or the sheep or the goats, and you shall not offer anything that has a blemish, for it will not be acceptable for you. So we're seeing a little bit of the repeat of the different types of sacrifices from chapters 1 through 7 of the book of Leviticus here. If anyone offers a sacrifice of peace offerings to who he is, to fulfill a vow or as a free will offering from the herd or from the flock to be accepted, it must be perfect. There shall be no blemish in it, so no defect. Animals, blind or disabled or mutilated or having a discharge or an itch or scabs, you shall not offer to he who is or give them to he who is as a food offering on the altar. So you don't give God the junk animals. This is actually the topic in the book of Malachi toward the end of our Old Testament, is that God is like, what are you doing giving me the junk? Things that are about to keel over, things that are missing limbs, things that are scarred up. Would you try to give that to your king, your earthly king? Well, I'm the great king of eternity. Why are you trying to give that to me? So here is actually the beginning of that whole thinking that you give God your best. You shall present a bull. You may present a bull or a lamb that has a part too long or too short. So maybe the ears are a little bitty, or maybe they're a great big. That's okay. You can give that as a free will offering, but for a vow offering, it cannot be accepted. Any animal that has its testicles bruised or crushed or torn or cut, you shall not offer to he who is. So if they've been neutered, castrated, if they have been hurt in some way in, you know, maybe a fight or a fall, they can't be offered for these sacrifices. You shall not do it within your land. Neither shall you offer as bread of your God, food, basically, any such animals gotten from a foreigner, since there is a blemish in them, a defect, because of their mutilation, they will not be accepted for you. And so as we close today, the focus is on this idea, you give God your best. After all, God gives his best to you.